If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
Just do the obvious or say the obvious or do the thing that feels low value to you. You know, I think people may really get something out of it.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music. And you can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it.
All right, I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, Liam James Ward. Liam has driven chart-topping, award-winning campaigns at the cutting edge of music and social media. He's a powerhouse in audience development and digital marketing, honing his craft with major record labels and global superstars. Tastemaker DJ turned industry leader, Liam blends grassroots credibility with high-level A&R and playlist strategy expertise. And so I'm excited to have him on the podcast today to talk a little bit about the current landscape of social media and audience development. And in a world where it's in many ways easier than ever to distribute your music, how do you actually cut through the noise and build a real relationship with your fans? So Liam, thank you so much for taking time to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, no, so Michael, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So to kick things off, maybe for anyone who this is the first time meeting you, can you share a little bit about your story and what inspired you to do what you do now with, you know, working with artists to help them to build their audience?
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, you know, the thing that's always an important thing for me to say about my story is I didn't really grow up around music. Like, I always think about those people who I'm sure have sent plenty of CVs into label internships and so on, was being like, I've been listening to my dad's record collection. I've been playing guitar since I was like a fetus. And it's just like, that wasn't really me. But then as soon as like I found music when I was probably about 11 years old, and this was a time of like emo, right? So I was like listening to Fall Out Boy and Paramore and stuff like that. The moment that I kind of clicked with it, it became all I cared about, for better or worse, you know, probably not the best of my grades and so onwards, but for better or worse, music was all I cared about. And, you know, from that moment onwards, from a work perspective, whether it was venues, whether it was studios, whether it was even music shops and so onwards, I just did anything to be around it. And that's kind of what took me on a path for a little while. And from there, you know, worked in venues and eventually got an internship at a record label, worked at a record label for a little while. And then at some point at the ripe old age of 21, had a bit of a existential crisis as to not really knowing where in this big old music industry I felt like I was making the most impact, you know, especially for artists themselves. And I took a bit of a look over my career and realized social media was the thing that I'd always kind of connected with without really realizing it. Because I think when you're good at something, you can feel like you're just doing the obvious thing. But actually, I realized maybe I am quite good at this. And yeah, that took me down a whole path that I'm still on, however many years later, and still figuring it out, you know?
A little bit of something, something.
Yeah, exactly. You know it.
Awesome. So yeah, I mean, maybe that's a nice segue as well into something, something, which is the name of the company. And yeah, I'd love to hear from your perspective, what kind of the biggest problem is right now that artists are facing that you've really kind of built the company to solve?
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there right away, because the company did come about to solve problems. You know, it wasn't like, I've said a bunch of times before, but I wasn't the kind of person who I was like, I'm going to work for myself one day. Like, I wasn't the kind of guy going on The Apprentice or Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, as we call it in the UK. Like, I wasn't that kind of guy. But after years of working like in and around labels and in other digital agencies, I started to realize a lot of artists, not even just artists, actually, people working in the industry were having the same issues. And the three things that kept coming up was this massive amount of pressure being put on them to generate new content all the time. The second thing was how, you know, I mean, this would have been about 4 years ago, I guess. We were even taking it for granted back then. We were like, is it just me or is the social media thing changing like faster and faster and faster? Now we like just accept that every 2 minutes, it's like completely different. But at that point, it kind of was still a bit of a daily moments rather than like what feels like every 5 seconds, something new. And then the third and final thing, which, you know, maybe is coming at it from a more specific social media point, but you can get very focused on followers and views and likes and all these things. And don't get me wrong, stuff like that and the algorithm and best practices and trends and so onwards, they can be important and can be a metric, but they're not, they're just a means to an end. They are not the end goal. The end goal here is to create a more sustainable career for our artists, right? Or, you know, at least telling a more rich story and so onwards. So those three problems, content, constantly moving goalposts, and actually trying to generate music consumption rather than just social media consumption, were the three problems that Something Something was built on the back of. And I'm sure we'll go into it in more depth in a moment, but yeah, in-house content creation, great young team who are always in the culture, living and breathing socials. And again, always just making sure the important things are what we take seriously rather than the little itty bitty things that other people can get caught up on. Those are all three things that make us different in response to those problems.
I like it. Yeah. So it sounds like the three kind of core challenges that you've discovered are like the content creation piece of it, like the actual, you know, part of how do artists express themselves? How do they share their unique voice? They actually have something to say in the first place. Then two, how do you connect with the right people when a constantly changing landscape? How do you actually find connected people on social media? And three, once you build that connection, how do you actually make it sustainable? How do you actually generate a real return and build a career from it? Awesome. Out of those three, I'm curious if there's one that kind of speaks to you right now that you think either has, I don't know, the biggest like myth around that you'd like to, that you can like kind of speak to that currently exists in the market, or if there's something that in particular out of those three challenges you'd like to speak about, which one do you think that you'd like to start with?
Yeah, I heard. I mean, myths, that's a good question. There's a lot of myths in our industry, isn't there? I think that one of the biggest around content creation is this idea that short form is everything now. You know, I think that there's a big problem with our industry at large, and therefore a lot of artists who are kind of just following what they're told, thinking that if you just do a really killer short form content campaign, that's enough. And, you know, it can definitely be enough to kind of get more people in, more eyeballs, you know, whether that's more trendy content or things that are really intending to go viral, or whether it's things that are more storytelling or, you know, trying to drive people towards something specific. Whatever your short form content campaign is trying to focus on, it can't be all of it. You know, I talk a lot about this kind of traditional marketing funnel, right? Which I'm sure, you know, you've probably spoken about with a bunch of your guests over the years, like this idea that at the top, you've got like a vast amount of people who are aware of you. And at the bottom of this funnel, you've got a bunch of people who are super engaged. And essentially social media is simultaneously trying to bring more people into that funnel, drive them down, and also make sure these people at the bottom aren't getting bored and they're feeling engaged all the time, right? And I think right now we're still in a bit of an epidemic where people are so focused on this top layer and trying to get people in and go viral and so onwards, that then you're hitting a bit of an impasse. You know what I mean? You're kind of, it's very shallow. and you're actually not letting your own fans get deeper in. And then they're expecting or wanting the super hardcore engaged fan base. Everyone's talking about the term super fans now with Discord and OpenStage and Lalo and Medallion and all these tools that are helping you kind of really harness the power of those super fans. Great. But if you've got this going on down here and you've got this going on up here, you've got to be doing stuff in the middle, you know, and whether that's longer form pieces of content as a very simple solution, I guess, quote unquote, whether it's music videos where everyone's like, music videos are dead. But it's like, well, no, because those people who are a little bit through the door, this might be the thing that invites them in further. Whether it's long form studio vlogs, whether it's live streams, whatever it may be, things that are going to feed your fan base to come further down that funnel from the top to the bottom, they are really important. So I guess to kind of recap, that myth is just this idea that if you do the top stuff, that's all you need. And you might get a really, really, really wide funnel, but if you're not bringing people down, you're still playing to empty rooms, even if you've got a million TikTok followers, you know?
That's so good. Yeah, so it sounds like what you're saying is that, you know, if you focus on just one of those, you know, parts of the funnel and exclusion of the other parts, then on the top end, you might have, you know, something go viral, but you may or may not be the right people, and you're not actually building a real relationship with those people. Versus, you know, if you start with like all you have is a Patreon, but you have no like top of funnel, like you have this cool thing, but nobody knows about it because no one's seeing it in the first place. So you need to have like a way to kind of bridge the gap between those new people and building a deeper connection with them, and a bridge to kind of go from discovering you to actually building a deeper relationship and becoming more of a true fan.
Yeah, that's it. You've nailed it, Michael. I think, you know, the opposite myth of that right now is this idea that if you just do the bottom, that's all you need. You know, if you just serve your super fans or whatever it may be, sure, that's going to maybe like help you. And also, I don't think the metric of the super fandom should be how much money they spend all the time. But I think this idea of kind of, you know, what's the term, kind of cost per fan or like acquisition per fan or whatever the term is that people are using nowadays. Sure, you can squeeze more money out of those individual fans. But even if that is your intent, if you're not growing that fan base, there reaches a point where you've hit terminal velocity, right? So your fan base, yes, super serving that bottom of the funnel is really important. But as you've just said, if you're not pulling people further down, like it's going to hit a bit of a dead end eventually, you know?
Good stuff. So the next natural question that kind of comes up from there then is, what are some of the best ways that you found? You mentioned a few of them with like maybe having music video content or a little bit longer form. Curious if you have any other suggestions for artists that, let's say hypothetically, they have like some artists who are watching this have really gone all in on like TikTok viral stuff. Maybe they're even like seeing some initial exposure. They're getting like followers, but they're kind of missing that connection. Or maybe there's, you know, some folks who've been trying to like build this kind of inner circle or VIP membership or different offers, but they're not finding it actually connecting with people. What are some creative ways you found to bridge the gap, and how do you take someone who's like a listener and actually turn them into a real fan?
Yeah, I heard. I think a lot of the time the strategy can reveal itself in the work, you know, and I think that's a very nice buzzy thing to say. But what I mean by that is that sometimes you just got to get going, and over time, the response of the community, the response of the fan base will really show you, okay, this is what's engaging people. This is what people are getting fired up about. This is what's actually driving ticket sales, so onwards. And you have to be responsive towards that, right? But that being said, as much as you've got to be responding from a content distribution side to how the fans are responding to you, I also think that the fans are therefore offering themselves up some great, like, meaty bits of how you can amplify that even further. And what I mean by that is some of the most successful campaigns we've had are where people at the bottom of the fan base or whatever it may be, we're showcasing them. We're showing how much they are meeting up before shows and making bracelets, or, you know, the best moments from the Discord community this week, or, you know, the funniest things in the replies, or doing video replies or comment replies or whatever it may be, to show to these people further up the funnel what's going on at the bottom, you know. And I think that's really going to bridge the gap. We're then getting into a place where, rather than just this kind of linear cycle of or this linear idea of top to bottom, it becomes more of a cycle. You know what I mean? It's kind of like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy almost, where you're showing how much, I guess the easiest way to say it is you're showing how much fun of a party this is down here. And the people who are maybe walking past and going, oh, that looks fun, they're actually coming inside. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the really key thing of that.
That's so good. It's funny how much synchronicity there is with the conversation we're having right now. With, you know, about a week from now, we're launching a software as a service that we've developed called Street Team. Basically, the whole purpose of it is to bridge the gap and help artists connect with their fans. And it's kind of like if Patreon and a Facebook group and Discord had a baby, but instead of Mark Zuckerberg owning the baby, the artist owns their fan data. And they can visualize where the fans are on a map. They can send them personal messages, emails. They can create journey email sequences to connect with them. But specifically, I'm thinking about like the journey feature that we have right now, which is like a CRM, like automations workflow kind of builder. And one idea that I've been reflecting on lately is about this practice of creating an intentional journey. You know, creating an intentional journey to map. You know, and like a customer journey, for example, it sounds like everything you're speaking to is really in alignment with this concept of how do you create a journey that your fans actually want to go on. You know, the idea is, I love what you share, like showing the future transformation, the future results, which in this case might be fans having the time of their lives, having this incredible experience, and literally just using that as a way to say, hey, this is the journey that you could go on. You know, if this resonates with you, if you'd like to go deeper, you know, and be a part of this community, like, here's what that looks like. Here's the journey. And I think with any like journey, in order for like, rather than like a funnel that feels a little bit like maybe like manipulative or sort of like, I'm going to like funnel in like all my like fans come down here. I love this idea of like reframing it into like creating a journey for fans to go down. And the only way for it to work in a congruent way is if the journey's transparent and you're telling them this is the journey that that you can go down. And I love what you shared of like doing that, just not by telling people, but by showing them, by actually showing them like the amazing VIP experience, by showing the, you know, the bottom, you know, of the super fans and what that experience is like. Really smart.
Yeah, I love that, man. I mean, honestly, that tool that you're describing as well, like, we've got to offline about this because I want to hear more about that. That sounds really great. And it feels like it could plug in really, really nicely with something we've been doing for a little while, is this idea of identifying fan leaders within communities and enabling them, whether that's giving them assets or giving them access or whatever it may be, to essentially run their own fan pages and so onwards. That's become a really big part of our strategy, and it's really working for a great number of the artists that we're working with. But yeah, so there's definitely something we can try and do there together. And I think you're right. You know, it is a little bit less. I think this oversimplification of like all fans look the same and they all go down the same user journey, it's really patronizing, to be honest with you. Like, these are individual people who have their own relationship with music and your music and so onwards. And I think you've got to treat them in that way. And, you know, if it's like almost like that game Plinko, you know, where you kind of like drop the thing in at the top and it bounces around. Sure, there's a set amount of different ways that you want someone to end up, but you've got to allow the space for people to bounce around like a pinball almost and end up in the space that you want them to. I think going slightly backwards in the conversation, though, I think an analogy that I've used over the years, I think really helps sum up a lot of how we treat social to artists who are trying to get their head around it. Because I really appreciate that, like, I've done social media for a long, long time. It's like, you know, social media is like a house party, right? Or it's like your club night. So the content is almost the DJ. It's setting the vibe. It's kind of like allowing you to set a tone for the evening. I think that community management and this idea of going outwards and, you know, engaging directly with people is almost flyering, and it's almost kind of getting people in and letting them know what's going on. And then this kind of like inward community management is almost the people in the club being like, hey, have you got everything you need? Do you need anything? Like, you know, do you need a drink? What's going on? Making sure they're all happy. But what you and I are talking about there in terms of getting some of the fan base being part of almost the marketing strategy themselves, it's that they are then going and telling their friends how sick the club night they went to last Friday was, so that next Friday their friends might come with them. You know what I mean? It's kind of that house party mentality is definitely something that I think helps simplify what you want to do. So if you want to throw the best damn party, then, you know, get your socials right. It's probably the first place to start.
I like it. Yeah, I like that that analogy. It reminds me of an analogy I've heard before with social media too, in terms of that house party example, where, you know, if you are like aggressively trying to sell stuff on your social media, it's a little bit like you're at that house party and you're just like trying to sling, like, you know, goods and services like the entire time. When it's like, hey, like, you know, it'd be cool. Like, this is about just like hanging out and, you know, getting connecting, you know, getting to know each other. But then, you know, when you actually start doing like a business, you know, kind of deal, like you might invite them from the house party back to your office like the next day, or you might invite them to have more of like a personal or private like interaction with you. And that's a little bit more like an email sequence or something where, you know, social media is good for like connecting and then inviting them to come, you know, build a deeper relationship with you. I really like that house party analogy that you shared.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. I think that's exactly it. And yeah, you're right. No one wants to be stood next to that guy who's just trying to show you his latest business offering or pyramid scheme at a house party, right?
Right. Awesome. So maybe now we can talk a little bit about that bridge and inviting someone like away from the house party. Let's say that you threw an amazing house party. So now it's like you're the talk of the town, like the party's bumping. It's awesome. And now you're looking at building more of a sustainable career, you know, monetizing it, but doing it in a way that you're not, I don't know, selling out or selling your soul, but like you actually want to provide value. What are some of the best ways you found that artists right now are actually providing more value to their communities and in making sustainable income while doing it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think there's not going to be one catch-all answer because, again, you know, I think to be respectful to the idea of fan base, you've got to treat every individual as that, you know, as an individual. And therefore, every individual artist fan base looks so different. You know, there are a lot of people that I think I'm seeing a lot of great things within, say, the bedroom producer or lo-fi hip-hop kind of communities where people are within their Discord communities dropping stems, or maybe doing like every Thursday evening, they're going to do like a little production demo of how they made like one of their tracks, and they're really bringing the community within that. I really wish I'd have dug the song name out now, but me and my girlfriend were in the car a couple of days ago, and there was a track where this guy was like shouting out his Discord community. Like he literally like on the track was like shouting out by name like some of his most engaged people on Discord, which was crazy. Like, again, I need to go back and find this track somehow, but super extreme example of how you can kind of reward those fans for coming in, you know. But other elements of value, it's like, you know, I think that there are definitely fan bases that are more emotional, and therefore the idea of having some sort of direct connection with that artist is going to be really important. Obviously, the scalability of that comes into play as to, you know, how much can you keep that up as you get bigger and bigger as an artist, and that's, again, something to look at. Or, you know, at the same time, there are definitely, if you're going to go and see some rock band and you just want to, like, sink some beers on a Friday night and go and watch some punk rock band, like, yeah, like, coming down and, you know, getting exclusive merch or whatever it may be, that's really going to bring you in. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think the idea of value looks the same, and I think it's, like, really hard to give one broad answer. But again, I said before, sometimes the strategy reveals itself in the work. You know, I think you've just got to get moving and get going, and slowly over time, it will just reveal itself. You know, I think evidently a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are musicians. I think we all know sometimes that you can just get a little bit of a spark of an idea and you start writing and then the whole song falls out of you. You know, that can sometimes happen. And I think if you can take that mindset and apply it to kind of social marketing strategy, it's this idea that sometimes that can happen. Of course, you've got to have a plan and you've got to have a strategy going in to be able to be reactive. You've got to have a rough idea. But I mean, we've had entire campaigns where we've had a whole plan and strategy in place and then something has just happened, or something has just caught fire way more than we thought it was going to. And then that becomes the campaign. You know, so you've almost got to be simultaneously willing to plan, willing to strategize, but also be ready to throw it all to the wind in a moment's notice. So my point is, sometimes the fan base itself will show you where it wants value to be given, you know?
I like it. It reminds me of that quote, man plans and God laughs.
yeah, I like that.
But that's good. And also appreciate that you're speaking to the truth of the fact that there isn't necessarily like a one size fits all approach. The, mm-hmm. the same way that, you know, if you're going to teach someone how to write a song, you wouldn't necessarily be like, this is exactly how you write a song. And it's always exactly. like, it's like, and like, you know, there are some like deeper fundamentals and patterns of what goes behind a good song, and you can learn things, but ultimately like there's this part of what's like the word that comes out is like sacred, you know, sacred about writing these songs is that it comes from a place that's almost like a mystery. Like it's inherently like it's who you are. And that's the part that kind of makes it unique. It makes it cut through. And that's the thing that's missing, you know, if all you do is try to follow a cookie cutter template, you're missing the most mm-hmm. important part, which is you.
Mm. Yeah. Sometimes awesome. You just gotta jam, man. You know, like I don't want to be too twee and I don't want to be too cringy by staying on the music analogies because it's really easy to go too deep into that route. But I just think, yeah, sometimes you gotta decide what beat you're gonna be like freestyling over the top of. But once you've decided on that beat, just let all hell break loose and just go for it, you know? And sometimes you just gotta jam, and sometimes it's blues, sometimes it's standards, you know, sometimes you just gotta see what comes out of you.
Mm. Good stuff. It also reminded me of, you mentioned the access, you know, being something that generally is going to be a great way to connect with your fans, is kind of having different levels of access. And as you grow, that access becomes more and more scarce because there's more and more people. And so, you know, mm-hmm. naturally that sort of like leads to like a higher demand in the market as well, in terms of, you know, maybe the prices that you charge. But it reminded me of one of my business partners here was one of Jacob Collier's first supporters. It was like in his VIP membership. And he okay. shared a song that Jacob had created for him where it was, I don't know, like a 30-second snippet. But Jacob, for anyone that isn't familiar with his music, I mean, he's like a multi Grammy award winning.
He's like a prodigy. Artist. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy levels.
I mean, I listened to that song. I'm like, wow. It's like no words. But the song that I heard that Bob shared with me was like a 30-second clip of Jacob doing his like stacking vocal harmonies. And I'm like, Bob, like, I appreciate you, Bob. And it was just like a nice gift that he created for his VIP membership. But it was exactly what you're talking about with like having that access or that connection point. And in the idea that you shared around like shouting out your members in your community and actually including them, you know, featuring them, showcasing them, it seems like that's sort of a through line as well in terms of, you mentioned like the just showcasing, like featuring your most dedicated fans is a great way to make them feel special and to kind of show everyone else the journey and to help kind mm-hmm. of create gravity that brings people closer to that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you've hit the nail on the head once again, Michael. I think that we can sometimes forget, and we can sometimes get very swept up in our industry. And I think artists themselves can get very swept up in a baseline normality as to what people can come to expect. But let's not forget that, like, the average person, and I feel slightly patronizing saying that, but somebody who's not within the music industry, like, absolutely would be gassed to get things that maybe we either as an industry take for granted, or you as an artist maybe just think like, no one would want that from me, but they probably damn would, you know. I think there are plenty of artists out there who are like, I don't think people want to grab a pint with me before the show if I just exclusively for people in my Discord like drop a bar before the show that I'm going to be having a couple pints with between soundcheck, and no one's going to want to hang out with me. But they probably do. Yeah, you know, like I really think that. And I always think back to this time where I remember being in a label board meeting, and I must have been about 22, 23 maybe. And we were talking about like this competition driver that we were doing around some album campaign. I won't be too specific as to the artist or the label, but we were going around the table just kind of throwing out ideas of what the prize could be for the competition. And someone had said, oh, what if like the fan gets to stand side stage for the show, for the London show coming up? And everyone was just kind of like, nah, like, you know, we all know this sounds crap. The view's not very good. Like, you're in the way, all this stuff. And I remember being like a 22-year-old kid in this like big, scary label board meeting and being like, but hold up. Like, I think a lot of fans would love that, you know? Again, like, without trying to sound too much of a douche here, okay, maybe there's an element of taking that for granted, and you actually know that it is probably a better experience out in front of the speakers and so onwards. But the idea of someone who is going as far as to enter a competition, is going as far as to have probably already bought their tickets to a show, they're obviously a fan. The idea of even just standing side stage for one song, that is like, they will talk about that for years. You know, I mean, I actually don't think I've ever told them this yet directly, but one of our clients, I actually won a competition to have as a Google Meet with them 10, 15 years ago. And it's funny that I'm laughing to myself because I don't think I've ever actually quite brought it up to them because it's not come up in conversation. But like, I've sat on calls with them talking strategy and so onwards. And I've not quite pulled together the courage yet to think of how gassed I was. And I think it's even still live on their YouTube somewhere where they did this like kind of fan competition meet and greet. And I still think about that. I still similarly even think about all the way down the rung of the ladder there. I remember it came up in my Facebook memories a couple of years ago that in like 2009, Enter Shikari like replied to one of my comments on Facebook. And I like screenshotted that and posted it being like, oh my God, Enter Shikari like replied to me. Like, it doesn't have to be all the way up to standing side stage or grabbing a beer or, you know, whatever the Google Meets thing or whatever else it may be. It can be those time intensive things, but even just dropping a voice note or dropping a DM or whatever it may be, such an easy way for someone to feel heard and seen, right? And you can bet damn well that if them engaging got them that bit of like your warmth and your light for a moment, they are going to keep engaging, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's such an easy way to bring people in and try and keep them in.
Mm. I love that. That's a band that you did that for. You should like cash that in, you know, like unexpectedly at one point, like, and just be like, so when can I redeem my character on your next meeting with them? That's awesome. I can't tell you how many times I've had that exact experience you're talking about where there's something I'm like, yeah, this should not be impressive or this shouldn't like be like a thing, but the people get so much out of it. Like for me, what comes to mind is like every once in a while when I'm on a Zoom call like this, I'll be like, Liam, it's awesome. Coolest guy in town. And yeah, I think for most musicians, like they're like, you're not that impressed by it. But like someone who's not a musician is like, oh my gosh, like, that was magic. Like, and it's such a great reminder of exactly what you're describing, that what musicians do is so magical. You know, so many people don't understand or appreciate how the music happens. And so it's a great reminder to show up and to connect with fans, even if it's just a voice memo, even if it's just a message, to help people feel seen and heard.
Yeah, agreed, man. I think, you know, it goes back to what I was saying before of like, when you're good at something, you can feel like you're just stating the obvious and therefore you almost like don't say it. But actually, sometimes you can say something. And if I'm being really honest, like I've had to catch myself like starting to do this sort of thing, like doing podcasts and things like that. I've kind of been like, oh, that doesn't, in the back of my head, been like, I probably don't need to mention that because it's super obvious. And then someone has messaged me on LinkedIn or something afterwards being like, thank you so much for sharing that, because that like really connected some dots that I've been struggling to connect. So sometimes like just do the obvious or say the obvious or do the thing that feels low value to you. You know, I think people may really get something out of it. So when we're talking about bringing value to people, as much as it can be revealing itself in the work, as I've already said, it also can just be something that doesn't feel that valuable to you, but it may mean a hell of a lot to somebody else.
Mm, good stuff. And that, you know, to your point of, you know, discovering it through action and seeing what lands, like that's probably a great example of that, where it's like, you wouldn't necessarily know that that's valuable to someone until you have that experience and it kind of, and it demonstrates itself. And then after you've had that experience, now you can be like, oh, I guess people do find that valuable. I suppose, you know, maybe I should do something like that more often. And so it kind of, it does extend itself, you know, through action and through putting yourself out there.
Yeah. We're simple creatures, you know, like I've seen it more than enough times where an artist has been like, fairly anti-socials. And it's like the second they get a video that gets a bit of steam, you see them completely change and you see them completely like love it. And they really see the value all of a sudden. And it's like, we are simple creatures. And as soon as you get that kind of serotonin boost of like, oh, I said something and it like provided someone value and I got that kind of reassurance that something I did brought someone value, you just keep doing it and doing it and doing it, you know? So, yeah, I think experiment, try things out. What is it called? Spread betting or bet spreading, whatever the word is. Try loads of different things out. And then whatever starts to connect more than others, do more and more of that.
Mm, I like it. Cool. Well, man, this has been a lot of fun connecting. And thank you for the gentle reminders back to the truth of, you know, how important it is to be yourself and show up and to test and see what works, while also kind of speaking to the patterns that you found through working with, you know, many artists now doing many campaigns and actually just seeing in practice what are some of the patterns behind, you know, what helps artists connect with their fans. Really appreciate you being on the podcast, and maybe you could share a little bit more about Something, you know, as a company, who do you look for in terms of artists that are a good fit to collaborate with? How does someone know if they might be a good candidate? And if they are, then how do they reach out and connect with you guys?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, I guess a bit of context I probably should have shared at the very beginning as to what Something is, because I always think it's funny that the name really doesn't give much away. But we're a content strategy studio. So, you know, we work with artists to build the strategy of what their content is online, how they're going to tell their story online. We help them create it and we help them kind of like manage their socials as well. And, you know, we are constantly, and it sounds like very similar to what you guys are up to, we are constantly trying to understand, how do we bring more impact and how do we create a better world for artists without trying to sound too much of a martyr here? And I'm really appreciative of the fact that, you know, we do obviously look for artists who they know who they are, but they can't quite figure out how to tell it on socials. That's one of the biggest things that I get really excited to work on, because very simply, working with artists who don't even know who they are yet, and I'm going to be really honest, a lot of people think they know, and then you start talking to them and you realize they really don't know who they are. Like, that is really hard, because at that point you're somewhere between a therapist, a parent, and like a marketing person. Because also, yes, I work within marketing, but like, I'm not a marketing director, I'm a social media person, you know? So social media is just one sliver of this wider marketing play. And I think people have to go away and figure out who they are a bit before they come to people like us, to be quite frank. But yeah, someone who knows who they are, but doesn't quite know how to bring it to the masses, that's definitely what we look for. But we are constantly looking for new ways to support different kinds of artists, because, you know, I won't shy away from the fact that I think that, having somebody manage your content creation and manage your content output and so onwards, it can be a bit of a premium. So we're always looking for new ways to bring a wider set of quote unquote products to artists who are maybe a bit earlier in their careers. And, you know, alongside the fact that I think our content sessions are fairly affordable, we're working on things like digital MOTs, or sorry, digital audits, because I found out not too long ago that MOT isn't a thing in America. MOT is when you get your car serviced in the UK. So I was like, oh, social media MOT, that's a great name for it. And then I started saying it to Americans, and I'm like, what the fuck is MOT? And I'm like, okay, we've got to call it an audit then. But, you know, whether it's that, whether it's our mailing list, we have a free mailer every month. We have a weekly paid mailer. There are these really affordable, low-intensity things that we're building all the time to help artists earlier in their career get in. So, you know, to answer your question as to how do people get in touch, hit up our website, obviously, something.social, and, you know, you'll find out all about the kind of paid mailer on there. I think that's a really good place to start. But then additionally, you know, reach out at hello@something.social. And I think that, you know, we definitely always want to have a conversation about how we might be able to help. Even if we come to a conclusion, it might not be a fit. We're always open to having that conversation to begin with, you know?
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds great. And I'm sure a lot of artists who are here right now are kind of at that place where they are ready to start sharing their voice to more people. They know who they are. And at the very least, they should reach out and see if it's a good fit. So like always, we'll put the links in the show notes for easy access. And Liam, thanks again for being on the podcast today.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for having such a great background to stare at as well, by the way. I've been getting lost in that background a little bit.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, this is usually the part where I make a stupid joke about, like, oh, I'm actually on my way to outer space right now. And it's crazy. I get good like reception and I'm on my way to Mars. Leah, great connecting. And yep, we'll put all links to the show notes for easy access.
Wicked, man. Have a great one.
Hey, this is Michael, and I just want to say thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and we've helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.